Welcome to the Vikings Voices podcast presented by Hy-Vee. I'm joined by Augustana men's basketball head coach Tom Billiter. Coach B, thanks for joining us today on the podcast.
Yeah, Elliot, you know, times like this, it's a good idea. Stay connected a little bit with everybody. And, you know, again, kind of what you and I were talking about, hope everyone's doing well, staying safe, and get through this thing.
Yeah, it's definitely unprecedented times all around the board, but happy we got the chance to connect. And coming up this week is the would be the 2020 Final Four in Atlanta. And, Coach, you've actually been to 35 consecutive Final Fours. This would have been year 36. Let's just start there. Why have you gone to so many Final Fours, and how has that kind of become part of your identity and kind of routine when it gets to April?
It's it's a good question. I don't think people realize. I know they're all going to say, yeah, you go down there and have a lot of fun. It's our national convention. And so okay. You have what's called the NABC, the National Association of Basketball Coaches, of which I joined in 85. And you go down and, you know, through my career, obviously, I've been on various committees. When I was a head coach at North Dakota State, the NCC back then, Butch Raymond always had us meet. So all the head coaches were there for the Final Four anyway. And so we would actually do our coaches meeting at the Final Four site, which I always thought was a very good idea. It was usually early Sunday morning of that tournament. So a few of us came in with a little bit of cobwebs and some shaky eyes once in a while, but it was a good idea to have it then. And, you know, there's always your meetings, your divisional meetings. When I was a Division I assistant coach, I was involved with some of the assistant coach type committee things. So you would always be there to hear speakers, to go to clinics, and then excellent job of way to network. In fact, what would have been 1992, this Final Four was when I interviewed for North Dakota State in Minneapolis, met there with their AD at the time, Bob Ensign, met with him for about 8 minutes, and they interviewed like 200 people. I thought I didn't have a chance. I was 31 years old as an assistant at Rice University in Texas. The interview went so quick, I thought it was either the best interview in the history of all interviews, or it was absolutely horrible, and I was leaning towards the latter. But one thing led to another, and I ended up getting that job. But a lot of networking, opportunity to meet a lot of people and to stay connected, and, you know, to be honest, a lot of recruiting, games. I got our Iowa game back in 2016. I was checking out at the hotel in Indianapolis, and their assistant, Kirk Sparrow, was right next to me, and we were talking. I've known Kirk for a long time. He's a Lute Olson guy. And I just mentioned to him, we were looking for an exhibition game. They had just had one cancel. That's how we got basically that game, was me checking out of the hotel in Indianapolis at the Final Four with Paula, with my wife. So, there's just so many things and stories and what have you, but it's just really one of the really fun things that you can do as a professional in your field. But it's also always been very important, very pertinent in most ways as well.
And I think I was still recruiting, still regretting taking that exhibition game as Jansen hit a shot at the buzzer there. Off balance, one-handed turnaround.
We were up 14 with about 8 minutes to go in the second half. And I think our guys looked up there and said, geez, didn't think we'd be, you know, they had three NBA players. You know, they were pretty good. They had Woodbury, they had Utech, and they had Jock. And they were very, very good. They got to number three in the country that year. We played well. It was the funniest thing is actually Coach Olson Lute was at one of their games later. They honored him. And he watched our game. And when we played him, we had almost like 11, 12,000 at that game.
Yeah.
That was their biggest crowd until like their seventh Big Ten game that year. We had their largest crowd was from that exhibition game. So people cared. It was a neat deal. But I have great respect for Iowa. And for their staff, you know, and for Fran, because to have played us took guts, and he always said it helped them, because that whole year they had an excellent team, and anytime practice wasn't going well or they had a bad first half, he'd bring us up, and he said he got their attention just instantly, you know. So it was one of those things that it was probably, I almost remember that as being more fun and enjoyable than winning the national championship that year, being a Big Ten guy and an Illinois grad. Working for Lute Olson, that was kind of a fun moment for my staff and I and our team.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool experience. All right, I'm gonna put you on the spot. We're looking at 1985 Lexington, Kentucky, a Rupp Arena. was that the first Final Four that you went to. And since then, it's been all over the country: Dallas, New Orleans, Seattle, Denver, Minneapolis, San Antonio. I mean, you went to so many cities. You've seen Duke win it a couple times, North Carolina win it twice, Maryland win it. You know, you can name the teams. Which one stands out? If you had to pick one game or one city, what stands out and what just the game itself, not talking about the extracurriculars, the meetings, the recruiting, all that.
The extracurriculars. Okay. The number one thing about 85 was, if you remember, Villanova won it. That's the year that I thought Georgetown would win it. Villanova finished fourth in the Big East that year. Started playing better, won the tournament. And that was and what was kind of special, people forget, back then, you know, Rupp Arena, I know it's a huge arena, but it ain't like where you play now. The venues were smaller, more intimate. When I went in 86 to Dallas, I believe this is kind of memory, but in 86, it was at Reunion Arena. Think about that. You know, the old place where the Mavericks, not even the current one. You know, so the venues, but the first big venue that was huge was in New Orleans in 87. And I was sitting up there about two rows from the very top. And I'll still never forget Keith Smart hitting the winning jump shot in Indiana, you know, eventually going on and winning the national championship. And then that night, New Orleans went nuts. And we were out, a couple buddies of mine, coaching friends, and, you know, we were Big Ten guys. He was an Iowa grad, I was Illinois. Indiana won it, and we're out just having a great time. And we're sitting at a place, local establishment, listening to music, and a guy comes and sits right next to us, and we start visiting with him. Big guy, big, strong guy. It's Vinny Testaverde, quarterback of the Browns. He's just hanging out, and we had an empty chair just by himself, and he came and sat with us for a long time. Couldn't have been a nicer guy. Couldn't get over how big he was. Just huge guy. And so, you know, crazy, goofy things like that. But that 87 Final Four, and then to go 10 years later to watch Lute Olson win it in 97 with Arizona over Kentucky in overtime, that was, you know, when they went to the Final Four in 86 in Kansas City, 80, might be wrong on that, but when they went to Kansas City and they ended up making the Final Four but getting beat, that was a great one. Kansas won it. That's when Larry Brown won the national championship that year. But to watch Coach win it in 97 was pretty special. I think it was 88. 88 would have been the year, I think, that Lute went but didn't win it. But that was a great one as well in Kansas City. And to watch Kansas win, it was amazing.
Yeah, that 1997 team with Lute, I was just going to ask you about that. You had a couple, of course, you're with Coach, but you also had Mike Bibby on that team. I saw Josh Pastner also was on that roster, and Miles Simon, Jason Terry. Gosh, you had 6-7 NBA guys on that 97 Arizona team. That must have been special, a full circle for you, because you were at Arizona as a GA, kind of where you got your start, right, in mid-80s?
Yeah, well, I kind of screwed up. I left in 87. I left for a good reason. I got to go to Rice University. Back then, it was the Southwest Conference. I went with Scott Thompson. Scott had been Lute's top assistant at Arizona. He got the Rice job, took me with him. At the time, Dick Vitale said Scott Thompson was one of the most promising young coaches in America, and he just ruined his career by taking the worst job in the country. And there was some truth to that. But we ended up doing a very good job at Rice. But Coach had offered me a position. It wasn't anywhere near a full-time position or what I was able to get at Rice to stay at Arizona, and I ended up not doing it. And I could have been at that Final Four that next year instead of visiting with Coach after in his hotel room at the Marriott. But, you know, it was still, like you said, that year was pretty special. In 97, obviously, other than I have a very good relationship with Josh Pastner, actually recruited. Josh came to our camps. He's a Houston kid, Kingwood. He came to our camps when he was 9 years old at Rice.
Wow.
We had him every single year, and his father, Hal, obviously. What people don't know is his sister was the player. She played at U of H and was really, really good.
Wow.
I offered Josh a scholarship at NDSU basically to get his father's players. He ended up not taking it, and he called me. I talked to him, his dad, a long time, and said, "Hey, if Arizona will take it, you need to do that." As a walk-on, money didn't really matter. So, you know, unique stories all the way around. But again, in '97, just for, you know, and I'm so glad, you know, Bobby was there to share it with Coach and the family, and you know, pretty special moment in '97 for Coach to have done that, and to, you know, anytime you do that, if you win a national championship, it puts you in a different place. You and that group will walk together in a different way for forever. You know, that just is a special thing to have happened. And I was very, very happy for Coach to have that opportunity, Hall of Fame coach, and just such a major influence upon me and my career and my family.
When you look at the last 35 years, is there one team that stands out as, you know, more dominant? Is there a team that you know, obviously you had a couple of years before you started going, you had the Indiana team that with Bob Knight that went undefeated. You have Duke going back to back in the early 90s. Is there a team or a program that stands out to you that says, man, this was the best, you know, group of college players, the best coaching staff, just the best team ever. And if they would have stayed together, they could have, you know, won it more. Is there anyone that stands out?
It really, you can't do that. That'd be a great poll question right now.
Yeah, that's tough.
You know, because, you know, several of the Duke teams when they were really good were just, you know, full of first round draft picks and what have you. You know, certain teams that you really enjoyed that you forget about is even like, you know, was it 89 or 88 when Vegas won it, you know, in 90 or whatever, and you forget how good a players UNLV had that
yep, in 90
with Gary Tarkanian, you know, and those are teams you would never think of. You know, you're sitting there thinking, you know, and how many times, if you really go through it, I don't have it in front of me, but especially in the last 15 years, number one seed teams won a lot. You know, it wasn't that many. There were some, and there'd always be a kind of a unique team in the final four. You know, I remember, you know, when I believe it was George Mason was there one year, you know, and yeah.
2006.
Yeah.
And when Butler went back to back too.
Yeah.
They were an eight seed.
And a very good Duke team beat them at the buzzer, missing the free throw on purpose. And Butler missed that bank half court shot by about a fraction of an inch.
Yeah. You know? That was Gordon Haywood. Sheldon was also part of that team.
Yeah. So I don't know. You take it all and you think about it all to have one really great team or whatever after that many years, I can't pick one. But boy, there were sure some phenomenal, you know, individual performances and what have you at different times, and certain kids would step up, certain kids didn't. It's just fun to watch. And, you know, too, the thing you forget about is, and I think this is what's so neat about the Final Four, it's different because it's a 2-3 week deal now with the postseason tournament. So this event isn't like the you know, the football's done it a little bit now with the four playoff teams, but this takes our whole country for the month of March in the first few days of April is predominantly doing nothing but college basketball.
Yeah.
You know? And I think not many sports can have that long of a time period for their championship to have that many levels from high school, men and women both, you know, the way the women's game has grown and those Final Fours. I mean, you watch Notre Dame and Baylor and South Carolina, these women's teams in the last 10, 15 years, UConn, obviously Tennessee, always special, but there's so many great women's teams now. You know, I really just feel like just the month of March is so special for all of basketball, not just college.
How has it changed from when you started going, you know, in 85, 86, and you're going to cities like, you know, there's some, you know, bigger cities, but Kansas City, Seattle, Denver, what was the – how has it turned into an event now? Meaning that, you know, now when it's in Atlanta or, you know, Minneapolis, San Antonio, like you said, it's a week long. Is it always been like that? Or how has the Final Four changed from what it used to be 30 years ago?
No, I think it's grown because it's become just like, you know, any sport, Super Bowl, everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe not the World Series because that's been such a tradition for so many years with baseball. But, you know,
Super Bowl week. Yeah.
Super Bowl week has grown just in my lifetime, you know, in the last 15 or 20 years, astronomically. The Final Four has kind of turned into that week. So many people take vacations to the Final Four, regardless of the team they're following.
Yeah.
And it's just become a huge event. I don't know if you've been to one, Elliot, but like, you know, Nike Town and all the, you know, there's now areas that people bring their kids and it's like Disneyland, you know, for basketball. And so, it, you know, it involves a ton of marketing, the Nikes and the, you know, Under Armours and the Adidas. You know, everybody gets their piece and their part. One thing that was going to happen this year that happened, oh, I can't remember. It's when Drury beat Metro State in Atlanta, the last Final Four. I think that was about 8 or 9 years ago. They were going to play the D3 and D2 men's national championship game along with the D1. And
when they
did that the last time, that was phenomenal. There was 14,000. They did it in the old Omni. and it was 14,000 for the D2 championship game when Drury upset Metro State, and it was like 13,000 for the Division III national championship.
Wow.
And it was all free, and it did so much, and it was, they were great games, and Drury that day would have beat a lot of teams, and Metro would have beaten a lot of Division I teams that day. And people just couldn't, my wife and I went and we're sitting there, and people we'd never met asked what I do. They found out I'm at Augie Division II coach, and they couldn't believe how good that basketball was. People that had never seen a Division II game, their family right in front of Paula and I talking about that, and they were just amazed at the quality of play. This time period obviously has affected a lot of things, nothing you do about it, but that's too bad. I've always felt like the national championship for D2 and D3 ought to be in that same city. The format they used, 8 years ago is what they should do again.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you said they were going to go back to that this year in Atlanta.
Yeah. We would have probably seen Northwest Missouri State play for the national championship.
Yeah. True.
Not taking anything away from the other teams in our region, but boy, they're pretty good.
It was just last week that it was four year anniversary of you guys winning the national championship in 2016. Well, I'm sure one of the first things that you think about when you look back on that team is the seniors. And, the first thing you said in the CBS interview was, I'm kind of sad because I don't get to see these guys play again. I don't get to have another game with, referring to Al, Dan, Casey and the gang. Is that your first memory when you look back, the group of seniors, or what stands out about specifically just the time in Frisco and the championship?
Yeah. You know what, Elliot, I didn't enjoy it because it's hard to explain. I don't remember like certain things. Like I love when we get back, but I was at Casey, Al's not married yet. He's got he definitely will be soon. I'm sure he's got a great girlfriend, but I was at Dan's wedding. I was at Casey's wedding, and you go to these weddings and you get together and you start visiting and they bring up things and stories. And heck, I think you were there chronicling all of it. That's when I really first got to know you. You did such a great job. And they bring these things up that I don't even remember.
Yeah.
What I do remember is getting lucky. Dan breaks his foot in practice.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it happened, but we find an X-ray machine that doesn't show the break. Really broke it. I mean, he ended up having surgery. He was off of it for 12 weeks. It was a big deal. We find an X-ray machine that didn't reveal it. Probably some X-ray machine from pre-World War II, and we just got lucky. We played him against Western Oregon. He came off and got us going. We ended up getting up big, didn't need him as much. And then we ended up, so he had 25-7 in the national championship game. So, those things I remember. I remember Lincoln playing a 1-3-1 zone. He drew it up. They'd never played it the entire year, but we had three seniors out there. And as soon as they showed a 1-3-1, Dan held his finger up. We got exactly into our offense, made three passes. Al buried a three in the deep corner, goes from 5-8, game's over. And you can see on the TV, the bench, Lincoln just all hang their head. Their coaches are like, well, there's nothing we can do. That's the play that won us a game. Everybody remembers Adams' last second little jump shot on the out of bounds play, which was great. And, Casey with 20 and 19, Al with 28, and Dan with 25. I mean, those were all unbelievable performances. But that going to that 1-3-1 offense that those seniors had run their entire four-year career and having Al not hesitate and drill a three from the deep corner, that's how we won that game. And you win championships, in my opinion, for the most part, even if it's one or two key players, which Northwest has always done with their run with young players, with seniors. You got to have one or two key seniors that just know what they're doing, and everyone adapts and listens when they talk. That is a big difference for championship teams at our level. D1, their freshmen and sophomores are first, their first round lottery picks, and talent does overtake something. When you're Duke and Kentucky and you got five McDonald All-Americans, maybe that's a little bit different, but those seniors, and I think Villanova showed that. Villanova had a nice run. Jay Wright's a great coach, but he did it with juniors and seniors.
Yeah. No, you're completely right. Yeah. Your senior set the tone. On the Lincoln scores the first basket of that game, you actually gave up an offensive rebound to Lincoln on the first possession. They score, but you come back, you push the ball in the court, and Al hits the three from the right wing right away, and you set the tone from the beginning. That was a fun experience. And when you get, when everything passes and you get back on the court, looking forward to you hanging some more banners down the road, Coach.
We got a lot of exciting things ahead of us, Elliot. I know we're in a little bit of a pit stop right now with everything for the entire country, but when we get through this and you know, the future for all of Augustana and our athletic program is unbelievable, and the direction we're going, it's very exciting. And trust me, we'll be right there ready to go for each move and each fun challenge ahead of us. We're very anxious to attack and can't wait. And I'm with you. I'll be long gone, but in the next 15 or 20 years, what this place will be, people will have no idea, but it'll be something. It'll be very special.
If Dean Smith is coaching into his 70s, that's what I'm expecting. That's what I'm expecting from you. So,
well, I'm only 49. I was meeting my
exactly.
I was meeting my mid 60s, but that's all right.
Exactly. Hey, Coach, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. Stay safe during these times, and we'll catch up down the road.
You too, Elliot. Take care.